So if you'd like to turn to page 1805, we can begin looking at this passage of Paul's writing. Paul has been writing to the Corinthians about the false apostles that have come amongst them, and we'll see what he has to say about that and what we should do. So starting at verse 16, I repeat, let no one take me for a fool. But if you do, then receive me just as you would a fool, so that I may do a little boasting. In this self-confident boasting, I'm not talking as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many are boasting in the way the world does, I too will boast. You gladly put up with fools since you are so wise. In fact, you even put up with anyone who enslaves you or exploits you or takes advantage of you or pushes himself forward or slaps you in the face. To my shame, I admit that we were too weak for that. What anyone else dares to boast about, I'm speaking as a fool, I also dare to boast about. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false brothers. I have laboured and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who is weak and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin and I do not inwardly burn? If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is to be praised forever, knows that I am not lying. In Damascus, the governor under King Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me. But I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. I must go on boasting. Although there is nothing to be gained, I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up into paradise. He heard inexpressible things, things that man is not permitted to tell. And I will boast about a man like that, but I will not boast about myself, except about my weaknesses. Even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain, so no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say. To keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
G'day. So, welcome, and In absentia, thank you to Leon for trusting a novice to give the talk tonight. For those who don't know me, and there's probably a few new people here, I'm one of the elders here, and my day job is as a doctor. I'm an anaesthetist, in fact. But a lot of my work, that doesn't sound good, a lot of my work is actually as an educator. I would be teaching somebody at least 2 days a week, and have been doing that for about 15 years now. But I've only preached about 4 or 5 times, so please let me pray. Please, Lord, help me to be able to wisely open your amazing word to us now, and help us to learn, so that we can better honour you in our thoughts and hence deeds as part of our way to say thank you for your amazing grace to us. Amen. The series we've been doing over the past little while has been called Healthy Habits. You can see the sign there. And the concept is to look at ways of thinking and doing that so we can better follow God to get into these better habits. And so far we've been looking at seeking transformation, about sharing hope, about valuing community, and next week about worshipping God in our day-to-day lives. And there's lots of topics we're not going to look at, including knowing God more, advocating for God, things we may well need to look at some stage in the future, serving God, giving, being grateful. Now, if you look at this habit, this picture, you can see this is a good thing about healthy habits. You know what I mean? There's this beautiful apple sitting there. And we know that we should be eating more apples and less Coca-Cola and less McDonald's and less chocolate and various other things. And we also know that regular strenuous physical exercise is good for us. And we also know that regular strenuous brain exercise is good for us. We also know that a little bit of alcohol is definitely bad for us. Any cigarette smoke is bad for us. And if you get one episode to asbestos fibres any time in your life, it could come back and be fatal later on. Now, as a doctor, I'll stop the medical lecturing soon, don't worry. I just want to say 3 things about what I just told you. First of all, you already knew that. I'm just looking at the boredom on your faces, because they just shut up about You know, the public health work we do in Australia is really good. You already knew what I just told you about it. The second thing is, some things are bad for you. And if you have too much of it, they're bad for you. Some things we don't want in moderation. Others you should never have. And the third is, you've got the picture there. Whilst we all know that the apple down the bottom is better than the Coke and the chocolate and the Maccas, we still like eating and drinking the Coke and the chocolate and the Maccas. Matter of fact, we still do eat and drink the Coke and the chocolate and the Maccas, even though we know it's bad for us. And we have all kinds of different ways to justify our need for the Coke and the chocolate and the Maccas. We'll get back to that later. So tonight's topic is about celebrating admitting your weaknesses. So this is not something we actually do very often, and it's something that might make you squirm a little bit as you sit there, as it's not something we're taught to do by the world at all. If you think about the lessons that we've learnt from Donald Trump in his first week as president, I don't think one of them has been admit your weaknesses. It's not been high on his agenda. So what are we talking about? There's a couple of things. Weaknesses are not necessarily sins. They're not necessarily wrong, but the things we're weak at are often the areas that we do sin in. And if we are weak, particularly around temptation, that often leads to sin. But our weaknesses, even if they're not sin, stop us from leading the life that God wants us to live. And often our denying or our minimising or our ignoring our weaknesses often derails our walk with God. Like our denying and justifying our food choices at times. So, first of all, let's just think about some of the Bible heroes that we know about and some of their weaknesses. And I'm not just referring to times where there was obvious sins. These are more just ordinary weaknesses, and we're just going to flick through a couple of things without actually looking at the Bible. You might remember in Genesis 9, Noah has just survived the flood, when what does he do? He goes and gets blind drunk. Go and look it up. Abraham displayed fear and cowardice twice. This was a man who committed the same sin twice. A great thing for us to, and a great weakness he showed twice. A great thing for those of us who keep on doing the same thing more than more. Twice, what he did was he passed Sarah off as his wife because he was scared that two different groups... As his sister, not his wife, because he was scared they'd kill him to get her because she was so beautiful. And he did that twice. Moses tended to get angry. A good example is in Exodus 33. He's been up on the Mount of God getting the Ten Commandments with them chiseling away. He got told the Israelites have forsaken him. Yet when he got down the mountain, he was so angry that he threw the tablets down and broke them. David had problems with lust concerning Bathsheba. Solomon, who was regarded as the epitome of wisdom, you know, the person who is said to be the most wise person around, somehow he ended up with hundreds of women. And you've got to wonder about whether he had his father's wandering eye as well, you know. Elijah suffered from depression. He was, and this is best seen in 1 Kings 19, when he's just been at that triumph on Mount Carmel, where he has lots of other priests of Baal have tried to get Baal to come down and light the fires around their goats, and then he pours water over the ram that he's trying to get to alight, and prays once, and God comes down, and it all goes up in a flash of smoke. Straight after that, he gets a message that Jezebel's after him. And, you know, he just runs away, hides, and goes through all the symptoms that when you look at it now, you go, that's modern depression. Jonah was fearful and chickened out from going to Nineveh. Peter was pretty bombastic. And he was talking of following Jesus and doing the right thing and the rest of it. And he even cut off one of the men who came to arrest Jesus here when Jesus got arrested after the Garden of Gethsemane. And yet, 3 hours later, or a few hours later, he denied Jesus 3 times. Thomas, one of the disciples, despite seeing everything, despite being told everything, just wouldn't believe anything until he saw the wounds in Jesus' hands and his feet. Mark was the person who wrote the Gospel of Mark, and yet he couldn't cope with the missionary stuff, and he deserted Paul on his first missionary journey. And in tonight's passage, we read about Paul and his thorn in the flesh. Now, it's not a comprehensive list. I'm sure you can think of other examples. Some of these weaknesses led directly to sin. Some did not. But all of them pulled people away from God. All of them didn't help their walk with God. When we stop and think, I can't see Donald Trump in the room, all except the truly self-centered amongst us can think of things that we're not really good at, that we're weak at. We can think of people who are a lot better at doing things than what we are. But we are also know that we're all created differently. So do these weaknesses matter, and what should we be concentrating on them? What should we be doing about it? The world sometimes plays a bit of lip service to weakness, but it's just lip service. And if you're ever doing a job interview to everyone and really want to find out what they're like, just ask them, so what weaknesses are you bringing to this job, and what are we going to do about them? You know, to just see what, you know, and that's, you know. What the world tells us to do is to play to our strengths, to go with our strengths, to just get on with our strengths and just ignore our weaknesses. So what's the theology about this? I think it's pretty important. We know that we're only saved from our sinfulness by God's free, unmerited, undeserving gift of his holy, sinless Son who died in our place, and we can never earn our salvation. We know that. We also know that the only reason we realise and accept that salvation is by this same God's further act of grace in letting us see what he and Jesus and the Spirit have done. God's Spirit works in us to make us realise our need of him and our dependence on him alone. So we only accept God's salvation because God opens our eyes to the truth. And all of us have friends and relatives and others that we should and do pray for, that they too might see what actually is the truth. We also realise and have a great thankfulness to God and Jesus for what he's done, and try to follow him and try to do his will. We know we shouldn't keep on living sinful lives. We know that we want to change our ways of thinking and house our deeds. But sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Thus we pray for God's leading and we try to obey God. And we try to do what he wants. And this is what God wants us to do. And for all of us, some things are easy to give up. Once it's pointed out to us that something is a sin, it might have been the first week as a Christian, it might have been 10 years later. For some of us, for all of us, there are some things we go, oh, I better not do that again, and it's easy. In some ways, they're our strengths. And normally we change our thinking before we change our action, but we can all look back at things and think, before I was a Christian, I used to do this, and now I don't do it anymore. But there's other things that each of us find really hard to change. Some of them are sinful, just plain sinful. In Matthew 5, Jesus' command is not to ever look at another person lustfully. A lot of, almost all men and a fair number of women find that really hard to do. It's also been said that the last two parts of a modern man that are given to God are the hip pocket and the right foot when driving. But I'm not really going to talk about those sins tonight. They're not what I want to focus on. They are wrong. They're things we need to do about. And we can think about those things, those sins. And in particular, there are some things that all of us find we just keep on doing and keep on doing. And like Abraham, we need to keep on repenting and keep on trying. And some of those are because of weakness that leads to sin, but some aren't. I'm not saying they're not important. They are. I'm just only got a short time and I want to concentrate on some other things. So what I want to concentrate on is some of the other weaknesses that we might have. Some of them can be obvious. Chronic sicknesses. A feeling that we're lazy compared with perhaps some of our hyperactive friends. A feeling of not being content with the money and possessions God's given us. Envy, if you like. A feeling of not having as much energy or others, or getting depression, or tendencies towards anger, or tendencies towards any of these things. Some of us find praying every day really easy, and others find it really hard. A bit like when you're at school. Some of us love maths, and others wish it never existed. You know? So some things are easy, some things are hard. What we tend to do is we tend to minimise these weaknesses. We try not to think about it. But they often worry us. The devil also uses those to tempt us and also to convict us and also to get us. We find finding them really hard, and it stops us from doing what we wish or stops us from being whom we wish we could be. Sometimes we just give up on those weaknesses for a while and just pretend they don't exist, and that might be a very long while, like years at times. So I want to look at these. So let's look at the passage Lois read for us, and thank you for doing that. And we're going to concentrate on the last bit, but we'll just talk about the whole lot in a brief thing. As Lois said, well, first of all, when we think about Paul, he started off persecuting the church. He, before he became a Christian, did horrible things. But once Jesus appeared to him, he repented on that road to Damascus, he accepted Jesus, he changed, and the description in the Bible of his life from then on is a huge inspiration to all of us in how to live a great, godly, powerful Christian life. And in this passage, Paul is again talking to the Corinthians. The Corinthians are a great church because they resemble us so much. They're definitely not perfect. In this, and he's refuting the fact that some other people have arrived at Corinth, these other apostles, they call themselves, and they're trying to preach something else. Paul describes them as, in verse 18 of chapter 11, as boasting of their achievement as the world does. And then in briefly in those verses from 22 to 27 of chapter 11, he describes this amazing list of what God has done to him and what he's had to put up with stonings and beatings and various other horrible things and shipwrecks and all the rest of it. Just as an aside also, I really think verse 29 is really special, where this really strong man of God, he talks about his concern and the inward burning that he has for others who sin. Here, you know, he's not just a strong man, he really cared about people. And then he states in verse 30 that if he must boast, he will boast of things that show his weakness. And then he describes his escape from Damascus soon after he became a Christian. Now, to us in our culture, this sounds like the plot of an action movie. I'm surprised there hasn't been one done about it yet. There probably has been, I just don't know about it. But in first century culture, this was not anything to boast about. First century culture was really about making yourself look good, making yourself appear good. He wasn't winning an argument or doing anything here. He wasn't winning a battle. He was running away with his tails between his legs, having been lowered down over war. This was an embarrassing episode, and yet this is what he's boasting about. And he then describes a vision a man was given and said he might boast of that man. Whether that man who he's describing is Paul or somebody else, I'm not going to get into. But then in chapter 12, verse 5, he says, I will not boast about anything apart from my weaknesses. And when you think about it and think about that culture in those days where that wasn't what you did, this is a really amazing thing to talk about, particularly because of what Paul could boast about. And then he goes on to talk about the thorn in his flesh. So a little bit of medicine first about thorns in fleshes. Can't help myself. If you get a foreign body stuck under your skin, and often there's a sharp bit, yeah, and you don't get it out, it doesn't go anywhere, it just sits there. It often gets infected, you often end up with a red area, pussy area. Some people get recurrent boils from it, other people it just drips smelly pus or causes recurrent things until you actually get it out. These days, it's simple. I give you an anaesthetic, might be general, might be local, then some well-trained surgeon does the deed, and when you wake up, presto, it's all over. It still needs to heal, but it will heal, and I'm sure some of you have had something along that experience at some stage. In antiquity, there was no anaesthetic. There was no pleasant dream. There also was no well-trained surgeons, and whilst they still knew the only way to heal it was to cut the thorn out. And that wasn't often. Sometimes that was impossible because of the risk and also the pain and what else could go wrong. So we don't know what this thorn was. We don't know if it was physical or mental or illness or a sickness. I suspect that anyone who survived what Paul just described in the chapter before that he got through with the beatings and the rest of it and the shipwrecks, he must have had some type of chronic pain and disability. But we don't know if that's what it was. We don't know whether it's a huge temptation which he kept on getting about something, but we don't know what the temptation is. Some people speculate that it's failing eyesight because of a couple of verses somewhere else in Ephesians. Some people speculate that it was the Jews, the way they kept on obstructing him, the way they kept on getting in his way. We don't know. What we do know is that he owns up to it, he prays it, he acknowledges it, and he boasts about it, because it is through that weakness that he's actually become closer to God. So let's look at it a bit more. So in 12 verse 8, he says it comes from Satan. In 12 verse 7, sorry, he says a messenger from Satan to torment me. Please note the bad thing came from Satan, not from God, but God actually used it. And God often uses Satan's attacks for good. Sometimes I think some of us think that Satan and God are kind of equals fighting over the world with us in the middle trying to kind of cope between them. But it's not like that. It's like God is this great chess grand champion and he's playing your typical self-centered, concrete-thinking six-year-old at chess. The champion can see what the six-year-old is doing. He can figure out pretty easily what the six-year-old is thinking. He knows how to defeat him easily, and he's thinking 4 or 5 or 15 moves in advance about what the 6-year-old's doing. But meanwhile, the 6-year-old is focusing on this. All he can see is what he can do. He's got no idea the power the champion has over him, and he's no idea that he's doomed before he even starts playing the game. I think that's much better corollary to have of what Satan does. So God didn't do the bad thing, but he used it for good. So what does Paul do about this bad thing? First of all, he acknowledges it and prays about it. He didn't hide from it. He didn't pretend it didn't exist. And he prayed about it for a while. He didn't offer up one prayer and say, oh, God doesn't answer. He prayed for it 3 times. He kept on persevering. And he also listened and searched for answers from God about it. We don't know how God told him what is written there in verse 9 when he says, but God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. We don't know how God said that back to Paul. We do know that he gives us answers to some prayers. Often that's through reading the Bible, sometimes by meditating, sometimes by what others tell us. But please remember, you actually got to look for the answers. You've actually got to look for what God is trying to say to you. He then listened to what God had to say to him, and in some ways he got over his thorn and moved closer to God because of it. Now, I don't think that was easy, and a lot of these thorns are not easy to get over. Well, I strongly suspect the thorn was still there. My reading of this passage is that the thorn wasn't removed. And if it was pain and suffering and chronic whatever, it was still there. And if it was temptation, he was still tempted. And if it was failing eyesight, he still couldn't see. And if it was the obstructing, irritating Jews, they were still there. It didn't go away. But what God doesn't promise us that there's going to be a perfect body or a perfect life or a perfect house or a perfect life partner. In fact, it's pretty much the opposite. Paul, however, got over what was happening and had learnt to deal with it and had learnt to realise that that's where God's power was. And let me assure you as a doctor that contrary to popular belief, you're all going to have health issues. You've got 2 choices. You either die young or you get old and wrinkly and infirm and then you die. They're your 2 choices. And along the way, as well as those physical issues, your parents and friends and spouses and siblings and children, they're going to disappoint you at times. They're going to anger you at times. None of this is easy, and Paul's thorn wasn't easy for him. And our weaknesses are not easy to live with. But still, this is what he had to say about it. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And I think we need to take that on board. And fourthly, Paul then did what God suggested he do. Paul got hold of what God had to say and he took it on board and he walked forward with that. You know, it really is an amazing pronouncement from God that he said. The reason he was given this thorn was to pull him closer to God, to stop him from boasting about other things, but also to pull him closer to God, and so that he could realise that God was the source of the power and not himself. And again, in our century, we need to realise and learn this. We live in a culture that pretends we're in control, and we have this pervading cloud of constant advertising around us, perpetuating this myth that we're actually in control. We expect good health and generally get it, and we're all terribly shocked when something goes wrong. We expect to have enough stuff to live with, or way more than stuff to comfortably live with, and generally we actually get that. We're taught that if we strive and get ahead and improve ourselves and work on our strength, then we can achieve financial security or get the perfect body or do whatever else we need. Now, Paul in other chapters and books encourages us to fight the good fight and run the good race. He doesn't say don't do anything. But that's not the source of his boasting. It's not the source of his power. He's not boasting because he's been running a good race. He's not boasting because he's been fighting the good faith. He realises that he's still getting it wrong. He realises that it's still not him doing it, it is God that is doing it. So it's not the source of his delight, as he says in verse 9. It's not the source of his power. It's not the source of his strength. And the more you think about it, the more I think this isn't what you would expect. There's a couple of things it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that you wallow in self-pity. It doesn't mean to give up and just do whatever you don't want and don't bother trying not to sin. It definitely doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean go out of your way to find things that are wrong with yourself. They'll come and find you. It does mean you are never going to be perfect in anything. Probably we're never going to be perfect in any case. It also means that there are some Christians who teach that if you follow God, you will prosper and you'll have a great life and everything will go well, and that is wrong. And I also think from God's point of view, if he is willing to accept that we are not perfect, which he is, if he is willing to use us when we are weak, as it says in Matthew 11, you know, we are jars of clay. And if we really believe that our best works are filthy rags, as it says in Isaiah 64, and if we think about what it was, if he can use all these heroes of the Bible who have weaknesses, then let's, in a lot of ways, pray about them, but get over them and just walk with God despite the things that we've got. So I want to go back a bit and look a little bit more about apples and chocolates and Maccas and Cokes. We know we should try and eat apples more. But the reality of 21st century Australia is there's a lot of other alternatives out there. And most of them are just like that. And I suspect that just about all of us at some stage have had a sort of our eating choices in some way been a source of self-anger and doubt and bad feelings, and we've wondered what we're doing and why we can't do what we want to do, and you know, why do we keep picking the stuff that we know we shouldn't be picking and the rest of it. I'm not saying it's not important, and certainly from a doctor point of view, but I think this is a little example about something that in a lot of ways we need to get over and concentrate on more important things. And in particular, let's not let Satan get us down because we fail about things that don't really matter and we keep on failing about stuff. God accepts us with that thorn in our flesh. God accepts us with the smelly pus dripping out of it. If God accepts us like that, let's accept ourselves like that. So in closing, there's three things that I think we should do about our weaknesses. First of all, we need to examine ourselves. And now this is not what society teaches us to do. But I think we need to go look for, realise the things that we're not good at and admit them to ourselves. We then need to pray, as Paul says, and as Paul did. There's nothing wrong with praying that God would take it away. Sometimes he does. And also ask for prayer so God can tell you what's going on and why. And third, if he doesn't resolve your weakness, then realise that he still loves you. In fact, he loves you so much that he's allowed that thing to happen to you, or to have that thing, so that you can learn from it. So start getting over it and ask him to teach you through it. I've been reading this book by Sheridan Voysey, who some of you, most of you probably know. He did a series called Open House on 2 Day FM a few years ago. And I didn't know before I read the book that the reason he left was to spend more time with his wife, because they'd been trying to have children for 10 years and it hasn't been working. And the disappointment, etc., was really getting to them. This book is about his journey, about trying to understand what was happening. And it's a really open book. You can see him and his wife's pain and anguish and grief and whatnot over their infertility in it. It also doesn't have particularly happy endings. It has resolution, but there's no magic child at the end of it. He doesn't give easy answers. And he doesn't pretend that he knows everything. So there's one quote that I want to read from here, and it's actually from an open house episode he did, where he was interviewing a lady called Joni Erickson, that again I'm sure some of you have heard about. This was in 2006, but back in the late 1980s, I think, she, as a young Christian woman, had an accident and ended up a quadriplegic. If you haven't read her books, please do. It's truly inspirational. But she certainly did everything she could to become healed and the rest of it. So I'll just read you the quote that he's written in here. And a lot of the stuff in this book is stuff that he wrote in his diaries as he was going. August 2006, that's when he interviewed Joni. In 1967, a diving accident left Joni Erickson a quadriplegic. She's with us now on Open House. Joni, you must ask yourself, why God hasn't healed you? Oh my goodness, she says. I went to so many faith healers. I got anointed by oil. I confessed my sins. I followed every single scriptural injunction. I had faith to the extent that I was calling my friends on the telephone and explaining to them that the next time they saw me, they'd see me on my feet. I really was way out there on a limb with my confidence that Christ would heal me. But he didn't. Christians sometimes want to ease suffering out of the dictionary. If you read the Bible, you'll see that it's often God's best tool to make us more like Jesus. The choice is simply ours to yield to it and allow him to use that suffering rather than complaining, avoiding, escaping it or divorcing it. We've got all kinds of solutions for suffering except to embrace it as God's will for our lives. But when we do, what a difference his grace makes. Let me pray. Dear God, thank you for our weaknesses. Thank you for giving them to us. They're not what you perhaps in some ways would have intended, but you use them for good. Please help us to look at them, to examine them, to pray for them and to accept them. Help us to know what you want us to learn from them. And help us to realise more and more that your grace really is everything. So we're going to sing now, and the next song we're going to sing is When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. This is by Isaac Watts, who was one of the most prolific hymn makers or hymn writers of any time. He also suffered from ill health most of his life, and yet he came to accept it. And I think this song is a good thing for us to be looking at the end of this. Thank you.